On this day in 1978, an Alan Cork strike allowed the Dons to leapfrog leaders Reading to go top of the old fourth division. The interesting thing was the Reading team included what would be a star players for us, Laurie Sanchez and Gary Peters. We are the same old Wombles. We're back. Hello, dear listener, and welcome to the Same Old Wombles. Today, I am joined by Adam Proctor and a very special guest. Graham's here from the DTB. Graham Price is here from the DTB, and we're going to talk all things finance later on. But, you know, there was a match, which we're going to talk about, and then... And then, obviously, what's happened in the last 24 hours, the great flood of Plough Lane, which is horrendous. So let's get the football thing out of the way first. The match against Bradford, I think, will forever be known as the forgotten match, because it was going to be squeezed between the brilliant game against Franchise, the thrashing of a franchise, and the cup game against Newcastle. But now it's got even more forgotten because it's going to be squished between the thrashing of Franchise and the great flood of Plough Lane. And we'll come on to this in a bit, but I guess the thing about it is when we're going to do reviews, when is our next match going to be? So the first thing is the game on Saturday, the Bradford match. Now, I don't think any of us were actually physically there in person. But are there any reflections on it that you have? I mean, it felt to me like it was, if anyone was going to win it, we were. Am I being biased? Adam, what did you think? What did you make of it?
No, you're not being biased. I think I only watched the highlights and whatever. So, and Don's vlog video as well so far. But it looked like we had a load of chances, particularly in the second half. That we just didn't, like one that hit the post and went like running along the line, one that hit the crossbar, an offside goal. Was it offside? Who knows? There's no VAR, thankfully. So we don't know. I don't know. You know, it's one of those, I mean, a point against them is really good when you looked at the form and whatever and our previous. So that's cool. It would have been nice to have got 3 points because we're doing really, really well, which is a little bit worrying, obviously. But no, I didn't see anything other than the highlights. So, I'm guessing at some point, yeah, when we weren't playing as well, someone screamed, "Sort it out, Jackson," and there were some changes and it made all the difference. But yeah, a point is a good point. It's a good point.
Brian, what did you think?
As I said to you before, Matthew, unusually, I didn't see the match, despite Mr. Willett and Mr. Wiggins trying to convince me to join them on the train to go to Bradford. We had visitors for the weekend. I think my wife would have hung around and quartered me if I disappeared off to Bradford. But anyway, I agree with Adam. I think it's actually a very good point on the basis of previous seasons and what they look like so far. You'd expect Bradford to be in and around the playoffs. I think they'll definitely qualify for the playoffs, personally. They score a lot of goals at home with Cook up front. We had the better chances. 3 points would have been fantastic, but a point there. In this instance, not bad. Yeah, it's not like getting a point against a team that's going to finish in the bottom six or seven away from home. We know they're going to be there or thereabouts. So, yeah, I would agree. Good point.
So, wait a minute, Graham. Let me get this straight. So it was Wiggins who was trying to get you to go up there, was he?
So Mr. Willett and Mikey T travel to every away game together. Yeah. So of the group within Pisa, there is always, always a Pisa representative at every match, no matter what, home and away. But they were trying to convince me to, join them on the train. So there's only four of them went from London on the train, which by our standards as a group is a fairly low number.
So this is legendary. So are you one of the founder members of Pisa?
No, I'm one of the new boys.
One of the new Pisa members, but their antics are legendary.
Well, apparently I haven't seen any of that. It's obviously much calmer now since I've joined.
Yeah, Graham, I like it. I like the fact that you're hiding this. This is good. This is fine. I'm sure there was some sort of, induction. that you had to go through, but we won't go into that now.
No induction. You've just got like drinking and football and singing, basically.
Yeah.
It's the most basic set of rules possible.
Like it. That seems to be our rules as well. So basically the Bradford match happened. It was, yeah, I mean, I think that they had a few players injured as well. So, but going away there, you can't deny it's a good point. And that would have set us up quite nicely because I'm sure that a lot of players must have had their attention on the big game against Newcastle. It was going to be brilliant, packed out Plough Lane. And then over the last 24 hours, torrential rain. And probably everyone's seen the images of the ground, but right the way around the ground, it is completely flooded on the walkways coming in. It actually, I think someone summed it up best of all that they said that I know we're trying to create Plough Lane as a fortress, but I didn't realise we were going to put a moat round it, which is kind of what it looks like. Basically, the whole ground is surrounded. Which I think would be one thing we'd be going, okay, fine. But then there's a this sinkhole that's appeared in the corner of the pitch right by the scoreboard there, up near the away end, which is just horrendous. Graham, do we know?
It's not a sinkhole.
It's not a. There we go.
So
So it looks like a
let's
sand
first
pit as
start
a
with that.
cone.
Contrary to rumours, we're not setting up a par three pitch and putt whilst we get the pitch repaired. There'll be lots coming out on it. Obviously, the insurers are in. I don't know that much more than you know, to be honest. Because obviously it's been closed today and we've just been putting all the wheels in motion. Somebody had sent the flow for the Wandle, and it spikes ridiculously. And I know that at Somerstown it was measured at the highest it's ever been at, so that the level went up of the river went up over 5 feet in less than 2 hours, to give you an idea of the sheer volume of water going into it. And I think it was 3 meters 23. It's the highest it's ever been recorded at. So, you can plan, you can say flood defenses and all the rest of it. So, somebody sent me a picture, probably retrieved from somebody in Wish, I don't know. But anyway, somebody sent me a picture of the last time there was flooding like that around what was then the Greyhound Stadium, and that was in 1968. So, we're talking about once in every 50 plus year event. So, I mean, you can plan for things up to a certain level, but when there's that volume of water, I don't know what it was like where you were, but I mean, it rained here in the centre of London. It rained all of Saturday evening, basically started at 10 and finished at about 7:38 in the morning, stopped for 9, 10 hours and then started again and didn't stop. So that's a heck of a lot of rain. They're talking about having a month's rain in 2 hours and 2 months' rain in less than 2 days. It's crazy.
And I know that there's, as soon as these sort of things happen, there's loads of rumors that swirl around online. People talking about the fact there was the pumps didn't work. I don't know, Graham, if you know anything about that at all, there any truth in that? And I realize it's really early days in this whole story.
So from the point of view of, has the system failed? No. Has the system been overwhelmed? Yes. It's not about, so that bit is, whilst it's useful to know, it's not the most important. It's the extent of the damage and how long it takes to repair. And that's what's the most important assessment for us as a club. Because if sometimes things can look really bad. And if it turns around and the assessment says, well, actually, we can repair that, it's only going to take 3 weeks, great. If someone says, well, actually, there's knock-on effects around the pitch, and to repair that takes 2, 3 months, then that's huge. So let's just wait and see. Instead of speculating, I'm not an insurance assessor. I'm not an expert in pitch recovery after
No,
something like this.
I
But
know. I think that
it's clearly not good. It's not good from the point of view, is you rightly identified, as Adam said as well, all that momentum going and then grind to a halt. We'll see. Obviously, we'll try and change fixtures around, we'll try and maintain cash flow, all the rest of it. But I said to somebody else today who was a bit doom and gloom, we've overcome far bigger things than this. And if we've got to, so what? If you know what? If we've got to play a run of games away from home, then that's what we've got to do. So the answer is get behind the team, support them, turn up in numbers. That's my simple approach to it anyway.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I mean, I'm sure those are the conversations they're having. It seems to make sense that if we could try and switch the home and away fixtures round, that would be great. I'm wondering if it's going to be too soon for the Accrington game for that to happen. I don't know. And then, obviously, hopefully, it's not as bad as you said. It's not like 2 to 3 months. And then, in which case, I guess we'd be looking for a ground share, which adds on a huge amount of cost if we go down that route.
And then you come to what insurance policies cover and what they don't.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it one of those ones where you have that clause of big, like a meg, like, because if it's a one-off kind of event, I wonder what clauses insurance companies put in for those kind of things, you know, because they obviously worry. They want to
Well,
make their money, don't they? So.
I'm not going to prejudge it because I haven't read the clause by clause, but an awful lot of this is covered. What it does great harm to our cash flow. It's all well and good saying the money's going to come back in. We might have to wait 6 months, 9 months for it to all resolve and all wash, no pun intended, all wash through the system. But yeah, let's let the professionals do their jobs, let them assess the damage, let them assess the cost, work out what is covered and what isn't. And then we'll take it from there. So, because otherwise it's just speculation.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think the big shame for me, I was bringing this new person on Tuesday night. Obviously, I suspect a bunch of people are probably doing that because obviously, cup tickets you can get, you know, get other people in. It was obviously sold out. We know that Newcastle bring a lot of away fans, so it feels like whatever we do with that fixture, because it's probably got to happen quite soon, is that we're going to have lost a sizable amount of match day revenue by even not being able to host it at all, or having to host it at some other weird, more inconvenient time, or at late, you know, at sort of last minute notice. Yeah, which is a real shame because it feels to me like the match day revenue has been doing really, really well. And the same on Saturday, I was going to bring another friend. And so, who's a friend of Evie's, who's now saying that, who's worried that I don't particularly like him, which is not true. He won't listen to this podcast. But that was supposed to be like our day to go out and bond. Evie's like, come to the football with us. Like, Dad will show you, you know, that'll be the day because Evie knows I'm quite happy on a Saturday and unless things go wrong between 3 to 5. The rest of the week, I'm quite stressed.
just come up on X, the announcement which I was waiting to see. It says our Carabao Cup fixture against Newcastle United has been rearranged. It's now going to be held at St James's Park, Newcastle, Tuesday, the 1st of October, kickoff 7:45. And we'll confirm ticket arrangements as soon as possible, including refund process for the original fixture. Actively working with local travel companies on coach travel for our supporters wishing to travel. We recognise this will be extremely difficult for supporters. Well, obviously, being from Tyneside, I can tell you, if you go midweek up there, you have to stay overnight. You cannot get back on public transport. It's just too far north.
Yeah, I was an external at a university in Newcastle for a while, and yeah, so I did a few of those trips up there, and it's a nice train journey, but you
It's
want to be
quick.
staying.
It's a quick train journey, but yeah, you.
Yeah, it is good.
I'd just like to say, for the same old Wombers, this is an exclusive. We have got an exclusive, hot off the press. Our game next week, our cup game next week is going to be switched to the 1st of October. It's going to be at Newcastle. I guess the hope for us is that there'll be more people there, so hopefully we'll get a bigger
Well,
share of the money. There'll be money there, and maybe it might even be on TV.
all the League Cup games are on Sky Plus, I think, aren't they? Whether it would be on the main channel, I don't know. I can give you another bit of information that will cheer you up that I know about. So Newcastle United, because there is such demand and the way they count points like on a ridiculous basis there, all of the season ticket holders have direct debits. And no matter what the date or time of a cup tie, they automatically get the tickets and they automatically pay for them. So that's 33,000 in the stadium, whether it's played at midnight or 3 o'clock in the morning, it doesn't matter. There's always those 33,000 season ticket holders. They're covered. To give you an idea, Newcastle won't say how many people are in their membership scheme. It's the only way you can buy a ticket for a game. Last season, the estimate was somewhere between 150 and 200,000. So I would suggest that no matter what, that the even if we took no one or took like 500, the crowd would still be 48 and a half, 49, depending on what the segregation is and all the rest of it. So we are at least guaranteed a decent crowd and some recompense, which will help out, no doubt. But it's not ideal. I really feel sorry for those who were trying to bring friends along or
Yeah, it's a shame. I mean, I think we'd love to show ploughing off, and to have it rocking and to have it partisan in our favour would be brilliant. I guess
Hey, we were going to get thrashed anyway, so now, like, it doesn't matter. I don't think the home advantage would have been much of an advantage against Newcastle.
how dare you? I'm so sorry, Graham. I don't usually have this sort of like scepticism here. It's just.
Well, I don't know where it's coming from, because having spoken to Newcastle friends of mine, they were very much doom and gloom because apparently they were woeful at Fulham on Saturday in the first half. Although lots of them, back to your point, Adam, about showing the ground off, lots of them who I know have got tickets were really looking forward to coming seeing the ground, new ground for them. Chances of Newcastle playing there, not very often, and they're my age, they're no spring chicken, so they were really looking forward to it. So although the fact that they they're now in a home game, I think a lot of them would have rather come to Plough Lane, to be honest, but there we go.
Well, there's an awful lot of Geordies living in London, so it would have been they'd have loved this. It's going to be, I know it is going to be difficult for us, and unfortunately, I'm going to have to tell my daughter that I just don't think we can go up to Newcastle on the school night. So,
Yeah.
but there you are. I think that was probably going to be the option because, as you say, Graham, we're probably not going to be having the pitch ready for the next 2 or 3 weeks. I would have thought at minimum.
We've got a game in hand as well, so we can kind of play that to our advantage. It's not, to our advantage in a sense that we can postpone things, so.
You don't want too many
No.
postponed. If you cast your minds back, I think it might be about five, six seasons ago. It might be less. Do you remember when Carlisle United had those terrible floods? And they
Yes.
were going really well. And they
Yeah.
ended up with something ridiculous, like about seven games in hand.
I know.
And the players were just exhausted and they whittled away and they just fell short of qualifying for the playoffs when before the floods they were. So you don't want too big a backlog. We'll make sure that that doesn't happen because they're far more isolated than we are.
We got some new cool physio guy that's keeping everyone fit, so in theory.
Yeah, playing three games a week for a month. I don't care how fit you are, you'll be very tired.
It's gonna be tricky, and I mean, I guess what I'm assuming, we'll wait to hear. Like you say, Graham, we can't jump to conclusions. I guess we'll wait to hear whether the game on Saturday is going to be moved to Accrington, which I think would be late notice at this stage.
I think that would be very difficult.
Yeah.
We'll no doubt be talking about it and discussing it, but obviously, even if Accrington themselves, as you can well imagine, they've got to have that lined up with the emergency services, with
Yeah. Yeah.
the police, etc. So even if Accrington are saying, "Yeah, we're more than willing to help you," and I can't see any reason why Accrington wouldn't want to help us out, you've still got other hurdles to overcome. It's such short notice.
So we're going to be at least a couple of games in hand now going forwards, and that is, like you say, we don't want them building up because it does become a problem. But we'll be fresh for the next for our for, we'll be fresh for Newcastle. Yeah, that's what it is.
I love that positivity. Yeah.
keeping our
It
powder
worked.
dry.
It worked really well against franchise, so why can't it work again? Yes,
Exa
okay.
exactly. I'm assuming that they wouldn't put out their full strength side. They'll have, it would still be a decent team. But
No,
I,
they'll put their full strength side out.
you think so? Anthony Gordon?
They'll, well, you, if you look at most of the, I'll call them the top teams, so the top sort of top eight or nine, they really run off a squad of pretty much 18 to 20 internationals who are pretty interchangeable. So if they played Gordon for 30 minutes and brought on Harvey Barnes for an hour, you know, Newcastle have not got, haven't got any European football this season. They've got a decent sized squad, not as big as they would need for if they're in European competition. They'll field a strong team. You won't be seeing players from their academy or their reserves playing, that's for sure.
Yeah, but they'll be up against Husbilla, for goodness sake. He's safe with cup matches. I mean, this and Oggs. I mean, like, come on, they don't know what's going to hit them.
Oh dear.
Uh,
Hey, so
anyhow, it,
I was going to say, Matthew, the other
yeah.
things that I think we understand is that the museum is not been damaged by the flood in a bad way, from what we heard, and that the shop also all the stock so far seems pretty fine, and apparently racking was installed in the storerooms and stuff recently, so most of the stuff isn't damaged. So I think the shop, the Matt who runs the shop, said 95% of stuff was fine, including in the thing. But there was obviously some people were, there was again people worrying that stock had been damaged, etc. I was more worried about the museum stuff actually, because that's irreplaceable, obviously. But it did look a bit wet in the shop.
Well, I think all credit has to go to Matt Haylock because my understanding is he's gone into the museum, and he's t anything that was touching the ground, he's moved that up. The carpet is going to need replacing, but everything else is fine. And as you say, 95% of the stock is secure, which is brilliant because I'm sure he was in there first thing in the morning and his wellies sorting it all out. So that's all great. I don't know, Graham, where anywhere else within the stadium has been flooded, the dressing rooms.
I know there were, I saw something about the offices. So we may have to relocate the office staff up onto a different floor or do something. I don't know. I haven't seen the full breakdown of it yet, or, but obviously anything that's on ground level.
I mean the image of them of going into the main area, the main club shop area, that was just that looked like a foot or two deep just going into the main reception area. So
Yeah, you know, it's rainwater. There's positives to it. It's rainwater. It's not sewage, because of course, if it's sewage, then the damage is huge, and the cleanup and the cost of the clear up is much bigger. So it's amazing what can happen when things dry up. But yeah, I'm not trying to lessen it in any way. I'm just saying it's not as bad as some people may have initially feared.
Okay. Well, and one of the things obviously that's moved is this evening there was going to be another gathering of Don's Trust membership at the stadium, and that has now moved online. By the time the podcast comes out in the next couple of days, that will have happened. And my hope is that people have worked together, come together following the SGM of last week, and are coming to some consensus together. I mean, I don't, it really didn't feel like we were a million miles away last week in what people were saying and what was coming from the DTB. And yet it somehow, I don't know why people just get angry. And I felt a bit sorry for the DTB members, you know, like you were on the, obviously up on the
So
stage and it was just
if we look at a
dealing with
couple,
stuff.
yeah, I think you're right. I don't think we're that far apart. I mean, one thing's for sure, we all want the club to remain fan owned, end of. We pretty much want the same things, for the club to grow, thrive, grow the ground, have our own training facilities, etc. How we get there, we might disagree with, but I don't see a lot of, I mean, obviously there's always some outliers, but they are outliers because the vast majority of us all want the same thing. Yeah, the constitution has been out of date for ages. We had a meeting about it, which Jane and Sean and some of the others, and I said to Jane, look, it's been broken since 2015. There's every single one of us on the call here who's been on the board holds partial responsibility for not having sorted it out, which is it. Yeah, It's true. I don't think it's a showstopper in the sense that there is a working group that's been set up, and I know there's requests going in for people to join that. I'm not a constitutional expert, although I have spent a fair bit of time over the years reading the Constitution, but I'm not at some people's level. It was an SGM, a members' SGM. So, number one, it's run effectively by the members. So the DT cannot propose resolutions because it's a members' meeting. Now, the DT can't even propose amendments to the existing resolutions because it's a members' meeting in the meeting. So the only way that you'd get through all of that is to have collaborated beforehand. Resolutions 1, 2, and 5 are effectively covered off in the existing constitution, but they're not explicit. So that's been agreed to work on. Resolutions 3 and 4, we can have a debate about, but also we need to check because whilst we can agree on something, it may not be practical. So it may end up that, the FSA turn around and say, whilst you might want to do that, you can't because that makes your constitution unworkable. So there's a chunk of work to be done. We've got a really good secretariat in Andrea Knox and in George, who've done mountains of work. They've said that that's their aim and they're taking that on. I trust them and I trust the people who will have input into the working group because they've spent longer, all of those people have spent longer than the three of us looking at these things and considering how they might fit together.
I have to
So,
say, I thought Andrew was great as responding to questions from the floor and online. I thought she was really good as the secretary last week, listening in. I thought it was brilliant, and I thought it was very challenging. As you know, we've only got one suggestion regarding an amendment to, I think it's number 3, which is about the board recommendations. We were suggesting that maybe if the DTB recommend a motion, they say they recommend it by whatever percentage voted for or against.
yeah, well, I agree with that. I think that's an. I know I've spoken to Chris Stewart about this before, several years ago. Chris would no doubt tell me what it was. But I agreed with him when we were saying, well, there's no reason why you can't say it. This is a board recommendation, and the vote was unanimous, or the vote was 7-3, or, 8-2, or what. I mean, I don't see any problem with that. And that the board, I know then people are trying to hunt out, right, who are the two who didn't vote in favour? That's a bit meaningless.
And also it comes
It
out in
just shows that
opinions.
the board is reflecting different strands of opinion. And of course, if a board is unanimous on something, it doesn't mean that in the debate, different strands of opinion haven't been reflected anyway. So
I mean,
I
in what you're
don't see a
saying as well,
problem
is
with it.
that it comes out in the minutes later anyway. And also, when we vote for the Don's Trust board, we pick the ones we want, and some of them we vote, are at the top of that list, and some are lower down the list, right? And so I would probably want to, I would be happy to know which way my favourites, if you want to call them that, went, because I'm kind of, I'm ranking them based on these manifestos and whatever. Obviously, yeah, there was an uncontested election, so that's slightly different. But it did, yeah, I mean,
You can
I
still
watched
judge
it on.
somebody on their manifesto because you have to put the people who stood for election. The idea that an election is less democratic because it's uncontested is not true. Democracy is about putting yourselves up for election. And we've had uncontested elections before. I take your point. We don't want uncontested elections for sure. But you can still judge somebody by what that board has done by their manifesto. So, you can look at mine from sort of financial activism and finance and all the rest of it. I must be one of the few people who go to the board and say, I know nothing really about communications and therefore I haven't got anything on it. There's enough communication experts, I'll leave them to sort all that out. I do notice as well, we always complain about comms, yet when there's any scoring of how good comms are for all 92 clubs. We seem to be quite high up the list, so we can't be as bad as we make ourselves out to be.
It's one of the things about being fan-owned is that we do give a platform for our supporters, rightly so, which means that all it means is if something goes wrong a little bit, we're all gonna, people start to scream and shout. Whereas I think in other clubs, it's, the fans are less relevant in some way, or their communications are less regarded. But for us, being fan-owned, we've got all these platforms where people can express themselves, I think, is one of the things. And one question I have for you, Graham, is that I get worried about the engagement in the elections. And we had Anne-Marie on last week. And obviously my brother went through it as well, Niall, where there was a lot of abuse. And he's not afraid to put himself front and center everywhere, in fact. But
I'll tell him that when I see him next.
I'd say he'll feedback, but he won't listen to this. He's not, I mean, really passionate, and obviously the thing he's doing with Fair Game, which is brilliant, but he got an awful lot of abuse when he was standing on, and Anne-Marie did too. And I was watching the SGM last week and thinking about you guys, and certainly from my point of view, it would put me off. I know Adam is some sort of masochist and thinking of standing, but
Well done.
that is the worry that I have, is that I
That was
look at it
well
and I
done, by the
just
way,
go,
for standing, not for being a
yeah.
masochist,
Thank you. That's all right.
in case you were. I thought I'd put that clarification in, Adam, just in case people were wondering.
No, well, I keep losing, so it is definitely going to be a masochist approach. Let's see what happens this time.
In terms of, because I was on the board with Niall and Anne-Marie, so you get to witness it up close, and some people do take it to heart more than others. Everybody takes it to heart to a certain extent. Not last week's meeting, but the meeting before that, before I was even going into the meeting, I had somebody saying to me, "You're really going to get it tonight, and you're going to get everything you deserve." And I think, I'm only on the board, for goodness sake. We haven't even started the meeting yet. Which is, aggressive, but yeah, I don't have a lot of time for keyboard warriors. And it's funny how many people, I always say to people, every home game, pretty much every home game I'm there. I travel to 2/3 of the away games, if not more. You can say I'm on the train, I'm on the terrace. Hey, I'm 6 foot 4 with ginger hair. I stand out a bit. If you want to come and have a chat with me, I don't mind. I'll answer any question you've got that I can within reason. And funnily enough, some of the people who are aggressive, email or whatever, when you actually meet them, they're just not as aggressive. And sometimes they just, they want to be heard. Whether or not what they want to be heard about is valid varies on subject and time. But yeah, I it's not the right way to be. And
No.
it's volunteers.
And that's what I think. I mean, the amount of time you've given up, I can only imagine what it's been like for you today.
So today's been a bit of a busy day, yes, because originally I'm the founder trustee of a charity. So my day was meant to be all about doing work for the charity. I have done approximately about an hour and three quarters today for the charity, and everything else has been related to Wimbledon. Because of the constitutional piece and everything else that's going on, the five out of the last 6 weeks, I've worked full time effectively for Wimbledon. So that means I've done 35 hours or more every week. And of course, I've got the small matter of my day job and clients who actually pay me. That's not tenable in the long term.
No, it can't be. Can I ask this other thing? Because we've talked about this before in terms of any sort of recompense, can't even speak today, a payment, if you like, for DTB members. I've often thought that maybe an incentive is that you get your season tickets for free.
Well, I wouldn't want that. I'm an optimist, so I was one of those mad people who bought a 25-year season ticket. So, it depends on the level of work that you do. There's a question as to whether you might want a stipend of some kind for the secretariat in particular. It depends on who sits on which boards and who runs which working groups. And it does ebb and flow, depends where the focus is if you're running one of the theme groups. The amount of time you're expected to give up if you're the chair. I've always said I would be in favour. If it was down to me and we had nigh on bottomless pits then of money, I would certainly be in favour of a stipend for the secretariat and for the chair. Just as I mean, even if it's just 3 grand, 2 grand, just because you're asking them to give hours and hours every week. It is literally really an unpaid full-time job. And the sooner that people recognize that, the better. The other bit is because it's volunteers and we're being asked to do so much as the club gets bigger and grows and gets more complex, questions about accessing pro boards and all the rest of it, maybe we'd need a different protocol because it's not rolling news. And just because, you're not a journalist, just because you've asked 4 questions, I'm sorry, but it doesn't necessarily mean that every question can be answered or even should be answered. So I don't know. This is just off the top of my head. Maybe we should look at a set number of questions and a set number of times in a week where go on. I mean, I use it as just basically watching a lot of the debate because a lot of the areas that people talk about aren't my main areas. And then I try and occasionally put information on when I know something is required that's factual. Or somebody saying something that I know I can say is wrong.
I have to say, I think the frequently asked questions on the DTB website, I think is great. To be honest
And
with you, that I
that
think
was
is
yeah,
batshit.
that was the idea to try and pull that together. And funnily enough, we part of the discussion about how we engage, that was what this evening's about. Just trying to do something different. So effectively it was, an open drop-in session and now it's online, but yeah, it's still the same. It rather than being structured, well, come along, have a listen, ask questions. If we can answer them, we will. And if we can't, we'll tell you we can't. And if we don't know the answer, we'll try and go away and find it out. That's about it.
Which is perfect. I mean, listen, we've always said this. We don't want to stop people standing for the DTB, and I know it's a lot of hours, but obviously, it's a fan-owned club. We love it to bits, and people are doing all of, giving up lots of their time to make this club a success because we care so much about it. So it's brilliant that people stand, and you, I mean, like, people have to realise you've got to give up a bit of time, and obviously there are going to be crises like today where you're going to have to give up a bit more time.
But this comes back. It depends on your area
Area
of
specialist.
knowledge and expertise. So for a lot of board members, although there's been a lot of communication today, there's loads of stuff I haven't had to be directly involved with. It's one of those, the spotlight moves around and sometimes it falls on you and you, but it's the underlying bit. I'm not trying to make light of it in any sense. There is a substantial time commitment. You are talking about quite a few hours every month.
But
Even
it is
and
your
that's if you're
club.
just yeah, well, we can only really move forward by a collective effort, by collaborating, and that dictate. The more we collaborate, and the more of us there are, the faster we move forward.
Now we
Sounds
have
like a it sounds like physics, that doesn't
got that. The
Yeah,
we have
Al.
got some questions about the 50 plus. That's which is why we got you on. And I
Yes,
know
I know. Yeah.
time is coming against us. But there are just two little things else on the flood. Is one, what can we as fans do now? I mean, are we just sitting and waiting for more news? Because I
I
think
would.
everyone's like chomping at the bit if they can get there with a mop or a bucket or whatever it is. Is there anything fans can do now?
Once we finish the assessment that. There will be an announcement, and if we need volunteers to come and mop up, that's the kind of club we are. We'll just say, hey, the more the merrier, bring a mop, bring a squeegee, bring some towels. But if the financial side of it, I saw that Graham Stacey that Dubes had put up a GoFundMe. Heart in the right place, but there's no focus to it. As long as people know what's going to happen with the money, I don't see anything bad about it, but there's no focus and it's a bit jumping in early before we know what we need. And I mean, you mentioned, Matthew, you mentioned about if the pitch thing means that we had to go and hire a ground. Well, ground hire elsewhere, even pitch hire. Never mind ground hire. Pitch hire comes in at sort of 15 grand normally, 20 grand.
I mean,
So
my senses were going into.
at the moment, Doom's Target covers us for about, I think something like about 30 minutes of football.
I mean, he's doing well. I mean, he's doing great.
Where's it got to? I don't know. I saw earlier on today, it was like 3-7 or something.
It's up to 5.5. It's up to
Good.
5.5. And I mean, like, listen, people listening to this, if you just go on social media, you want to do something, then you can. I get my sense is probably there's going to be have to be a much more concerted effort, because right now we simply don't know what is needed. We don't know what's required, and it might be that
Well,
we need to dig into our pockets to help relay the pitch or
this
the
is,
ground hire.
well, yeah, you speak to the person who's now chairing the fundraising group. So, there are certain things that we should know early. And hopefully then we can look at what the time frame is. So there are things that are cash flow, so we can factor those in. There are things that will be one-off payments that will be covered by insurance. There are things that won't be covered by insurance, and that's what we need to know. Yeah, one thing that's not covered, of course, is when you like your home contents. If you go and, break a window or whatever, or do something, spill coffee all over your nice white rug or whatever it is, you've got an excess on a policy, and we're no different. We've got an excess, and if we're triggering a payment up to that excess, we have to find the money. Now, it may be that our cup fortune, which I'll call it that, football fortune, it's termed in the accounting side, in the finance reports. It may be that that covers it, but it may not. So we may have to do a, I don't know. I'm just trying to use that as an example. I can see certain instances where we might do a specific fundraise for certain things. What it does show is that we don't have much spare capacity. We don't have much runway. The great thing is we are good at rallying around, and I don't see this as an existential crisis in any shape or form. It's just annoying financially, and I mean, financially painful, but just annoying. And we will get over it and we will get around it. But it does show that you do need the levers and you do need a bit of flexibility. So in a bizarre way, as I said to you earlier on, little did I know when I said fix the roof when the sun's shining, I didn't realize the rain was coming and how much rain there was going to be. But it is a bit about that. We all want the fan-owned bit. That's a given. There are certain things. So if we all agree that being fan-owned is the thing, and for me, it is. It's the reason I got involved. I've said to Adam before when we've had a drink, if the minute that someone says, right, we're not fan owned, I would question if I'd even go. Never mind doing it. I certainly wouldn't be doing anything for the club. I would go less, I think. I don't think I could stop going completely, but I would go less. I would be far less committed. And there are many more like me, and I'm sure you, to a greater extent or lesser extent, you guys are in the same boat. So that's a non-negotiable. And there's one other, is that we spent all that time, money, effort to come back to Plough Lane. No one is ever taking that away. So if the fan bit, let's deal with the fan bit first of all, because what we're talking about here is in two groups, really, isn't it? One are constitutional protections, and the other bit are financial protections. So constitutionally, if you look at the restricted actions, 2A and 2B, one's about moving the ground and sale of the ground and, putting leases on it. I haven't got it in front of me, so apologies. We could, I think we should, make those super restricted actions. So 90%, that would be my thing. You say, well, why not 100? Well, remember, on a share register, you could hem yourself in elsewhere, because if there was an absolute emergency, I mean, this is where you make the glass as thick as possible on in case of emergency break glass. You'd probably need a wrecking ball to open it, but you'd need to be able to do that, because if you have 100%, then let's say my I held shares, I get hit by the number 11 bus, and then who gets to vote the shares? Maybe I've not gone through probate or whatever, so you need a little bit of leeway. But if, to all intents and purposes, 90% is really 100 when it comes to voting anything through. So I would definitely be in favour of that. So I would effectively enshrine ownership of the ground to that extent. So sorry for those who don't like the word enshrinement, but that's using it, I see it, in the right way,
I think that's
in a positive and specific way, rather than saying, we're going to wrap everything in cotton wool forever.
and certainly enshrinement is our buzzword here on the same old woke wombles. Yeah, it's but the, I guess the big thing for us is the going under 75%. Only in so much that what we understand on, in company law is that
Okay.
a minority shareholders having the right. So you could get if you own 25%, or if you've got a block of people that come together with 25%, they could block things like special resolutions,
Which is.
and maybe block changes to the constitution. So in the company law, so that's I think our worry is less about is. We understand that being 50 plus
If it
is
walks
fan
like a duck,
owned.
yeah, exactly. What's the definition of fan owned? It's not 75.
No.
So as long as we're all clear on that, yeah. So
We totally get that.
Exeter, Luton, sorry, Luton, Exeter, obviously, they're at 58.
And it was interesting
They're
because I was hearing
fan
you
owned.
on the official podcast, Graham, which you were brilliant on, by the way. That was very clear. Thank you for doing that. You talked about Exeter wanting to, you were saying they're looking to buy back more of their shares.
Yeah, well, I'm good. I managed to make myself unpopular with sort of both sides of this debate. Some say,
Oh.
you're sitting on the fence, yeah, you've got splinters in your backside. It's not true. I don't like people thinking that equity is the answer to everything either. And I call that lazy use of equity, in the sense that I think we have to be financially active. The club was born out of protest and has always fought. And I think that the energy that was demonstrated in that long struggle was immense, but that needs to be redirected. You could take the more stringent view that Stalin took, of course, at the start of a war, you kill all the generals because they're going to fight the last war. I'm not quite in favour of that. That's a bit extreme. But really, we just need to refocus our energy, and that's what I mean by financial activism. Because if you look at Exeter, they've been buying back shares, their trust. And they've been increasing their ownership. And also how we do things. So if you think about the process of raising money, our first port of call should be our supporters by the DT and our existing shareholders. So I don't necessarily think that immediately saying, oh, because of where we are, we're going to waive our preemption rights. That may not necessarily be the best way to go. You need to ask everybody first of all. That's back to that collective bit, and the more of us are involved in the collaboration. And yes, it might increase the size of the share register, but so be it. We need to, our equity is precious and should be used as a last resort. It should be an insurance policy around debt. It should never be used for playing budget. Ideally, it should be used sparingly. For deposits, for capital projects. No, I'm a simple soul at heart, so I think that's quite easy to break into three bits. No,
I mean, that
policy,
makes a, I
Dad.
mean, that makes sense to me, but I mean, so I don't know where I stand anymore. Like, I was pretty much 75% not going to move, and now I'm thinking maybe I'm up for moving. I guess because lots of people have said to me, this thing is about having the ability in an emergency to unlock capital, right? Because someone could then buy a bunch of shares and it would still keep us fan owned. But the likelihood of that happening feels also not very likely. I don't know how many very, very rich owners we could have that could suddenly pump money in. And I also wonder, there is some equity still to be sold, which isn't hasn't got anyone lining up to buy it? And, you know, does if as an you know, Nick Robinson's the only one I know who's put a load of money in, but if suddenly he could buy more shares, is it more interesting to them or not? And they
No.
won't get any.
Well, Nick's different. So,
Sure.
as you can possibly recall, we've looked at all sorts, but we looked at creating a purpose foundation. That was myself and Dave Boyle and Charlie Talbot. And really, that's just finding a way of ensuring fan ownership. But you're looking at stewardship equity. And ultimately, there's no beating around the bush. That's what we're talking about. If you speak to Nick, he's got no interest in buying more. He's a couple of times topped up to maintain the level he was at. Last round, he didn't. And he said, you know, I hold enough. The idea of 15% is not something that he's interested in. So he views it as stewardship equity in a community asset. So, you know, I mean, for those people who know Nick's background, they'll know that, you know, he's put money up for the Polka Theatre and all sorts of other bits and pieces. So he's very much invested in the wider community in Wimbledon, not just the football.
So it sounds to me then that it doesn't become more attractive to buy any more shares, even if we have the option. So I guess why wouldn't we just stay with the status quo?
It's not about attractiveness. It's about optionality, because if we stay where we are, you can't find another Nick, because there's not enough equity for that. So we are looking for those type of people, and they are quite rare, but there are people out there, and we know there are people out there. So, and anybody who thinks, oh well, this is just some cunning, devilish plan that they're coming in and they're going to take the ground over, which ridiculous on two levels, which I can cover off if needs be. But I get to see everyone who approaches the club, who gets past the first hurdle. And one of the things we've promised is we'll produce a process flow to show all the things that happen when we're, because the fans don't get to see a lot of it. So we you know, sometimes people will approach the club directly. If they're going to be a minority shareholder, one of the things that's normally on the list is we say, go and speak to Nick, because he'll tell you exactly what it's like. You know, we've had plenty of approaches from American, potential investors, and they always come to the same point. Oh, after 15 years, when I want to exit, how do I exit? Well, at the moment, you don't. It's not how it works. We've had Brazilian private equity, we've had Italians, we've had all sorts that just don't get past the first stage. We had fairly recently, we had an Italian gentleman who wanted to bring in his own transfer expert, and we'll buy 38. I want to buy 38%. You never get 38%. Off you go. So it's creating the framework and giving ourselves the option. The one final point, sorry, I'm rattling along.
No,
The
carry on.
one final point about all of that is the length of time it takes to onboard an investor. We've seen this higher up the league with club takeovers and how long they're going on. I've got friends involved in the Everton one, which has been an interesting watch. I'll leave it at that for the time being. It from sort of gun to tape, and meeting league requirements, and you know, checking the individuals out and going through all the processes, we're talking 8 to 10 months.
Yeah.
So if you look at where we get to, 27. By the time we've done this, we haven't got much lead in time.
So I guess that's a follow-up question is we understand that the request for the current bond payments in January, February 2025 is factored into the business plan, and that is as it is. And in theory, people already have now indicated where they're going to go, and hopefully those numbers have matched up to our previous estimation.
Yes. So what we'd budgeted for 2025 is covered. But of course, what you've got to remember is there's a whole group of people who rolled over. So previously we had two hurdles of 3.4 and 3.3. 25, 27. And then we had 1.9 at 30. Well, 30 has now become another 3.3 because we've only moved, it hasn't gone away. Now, if we pay off 1.5 to 1.7 of debt, that's great. But there's still a lot of debt there. The other issue is you've got to look at the different tranches. So tranche one was before everything started going mad. I could get very political at that point, but I won't. I'll leave Liz Truss out of it. So therefore, the top interest rate you could have was, I think I'm right in saying 4%. Then, of course, base rates started rising quite rapidly. So when we did the second tranche, it was up to 7%. So that 2027 tranche, when it comes to maturity, we know that there are more people who have a higher interest rate that we can't replicate. So we're going to have to offer them less, that it won't be seven. You know, we might be able to offer them five. I'm guessing at the moment. I don't know. It might only be four. Who knows? Depends where everything sits. So that means that the likelihood is more of them will seek to encash at maturity. We also know that more of people who did the second bond were not fans, not core fans. There's plenty of fans in there, but there's a lot more people from not just other clubs, but just seeing it purely as an investment. So therefore, you cannot rely on football fortune. This is where we started. This is where we started today, didn't we? Yeah.
So I guess the final question for me, because I'm still trying to work out where I'm gonna, you know, where I'm going in my thoughts and voting and whatever. So I guess the second part then is, does so 2027's coming. We know how much money it is. We estimate like people are not going are going to want more or whatever, want their money back because there's less. It's less friendly, right? Does it,
Yeah,
but.
it's like an onion. It's like peeling an onion, but going further out. Yeah.
So, how likely in your mind would you think that an owner who has a substantial amount of cash would think, I'm going to buy shares to pay that in 2027 because I know that's going to secure the club? I mean,
I can't judge any individuals who come in, of course, because they all have different motivations and then they'll have numerous motivations. The reason this is just about having a lever. Look, if we have a fair wind, let's say we get promoted. Let's say that I don't know, Leo Castledine gets sold for 20 million, you know, 3 years down the line, because Chelsea can get XYZ for him or whatever. All of those sort of things, we can't factor them in. And in fact, when we're looking at our accounts, if we go to an external lender, they won't take account of transfer fees coming in and all the rest of it, even if you've got add-ons rolling along quite nicely. So therefore, you can't rely on football fortune. And if we look at our budget, yeah, we can do lots of things, and we'll do fundraisers, and we'll do everything to try and make the gap as small as possible. But you've got to be realistic about a what if. And we can put all the constitutional protections that we want in place. Didn't help us in 20, didn't help us in 2019. And I'm in the Mike Tyson school. Everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
but I get so I guess so for me this is the it relates to all of this is that we've kind of agreed that the Constitution has some issues and we could tighten it up and we can make things basically put that glass bigger so that we can't so that it's really secure, right, in terms of the fan ownership bits, etc. So as we are as we can afford the 2025 payments, and I know that we obviously said we'd go to the fans for this vote, shouldn't we wait to have that two tick type vote until we've really managed to spend time on the Constitution? Because I
The
can't.
Constitution, so let's be clear. The Constitution, the SGM, the members' SGM, the restricted actions are tough hurdles to clear and are actually tougher because of the number of new members we've got, which is both, as usual, a blessing and a curse. But that's not proxies or any of that. It's quite straightforward. There's a polling date, the polls open, you vote. You can have read all the material that's come out, and you know, you've got people having different issues. So some people have said they worry about the pitch. I'm suggesting that Super restrictive actions would be the way to protect that. I would also point out that there's a very good document that was somewhat buried in all the paperwork that came out about why we don't need a Chelsea pitch owner's approach. It's not comparable for those people who don't know their history. Chelsea at the time, Bates was not the majority shareholder. He was the largest shareholder. He had a very aggressive minority shareholder in Marler Estates, namely David Bulstrode, who'd tried to buy other clubs as well. He'd already had a try on with Fulham and QPR and all the rest of it. So the answer that he came up with was a great block against aggressive property speculators. It's not turned out to be so great for Chelsea going forward when you look at the issues they have now. So it can, in a moment of crisis, it was a great idea. In the long term, it's created problems for Chelsea. Not insurmountable, but it has created problems. So you can look at it from a point of view of timing, but there's no need because that was the next best thing they could create to a community benefit society. So they've tried to create as much as possible what they'd have had through a community benefit society. Well, we've already got that. So why we need to create that, I don't know. But there's the other bit is the financial bit. We need financial resilience. So it's always a combination. In a perfect world, we would be 100% plan owned. We'd have no debt. Player lane would be 20,000. We'd be in the championship. It'd be all of the community support, all the community events would all be based out of player lane. Everybody would be playing there. It would be wonderful. Well, that's where we're going to try and get to. But we'll probably never get there. But we'll get as close as we can to it.
So last bit, sorry, Matt, just thinking the last bit on this. So we know these votes have to have a high turnout, and we've increased the number of members, which then means we have to have a higher turnout of maybe the ones that have not engaged before. So say what might be more likely is that we don't get enough turnout, even with a poll or whatever, and then we're then that obviously then it won't go. We won't get to the deciding whether it's 50 01 or not. Are we just going to keep asking this question? Like, what happens then?
Well, so if we've okay, let me go back one step. Sorry, I was just thinking that through. I don't think it's a comparative. One of the reasons the Constitution is not fit for purpose is it doesn't live in the digital age. So if you look at turnout numbers and voting and all the rest of it, when people can vote digitally, the numbers. So I think we can get to the numbers. I'm not too concerned about that. Yes, there is a piece of education, but there's a piece of education to go on for all members at all times. Like all of us, we never stop learning, do we? So that's just how it is. So I'm not worried about the turnout bit. What I would say is this comes back to what we lose. The whole part of the consultation, the whole part of talking about super restriction restricted actions now is putting in place absolutely everything that we could want because there's got to be at some point a limit where we just can't put any more in.
And
And
just that one question.
then it comes back to what flexibility can we create and how can we grow our financial resilience? And that's where financial activism comes in because the fans have to get involved. It's not enough to just say, right, we've done it. We might be exhausted and we've had a little break. Okay, let's go again.
And listen, I think a lot of fans are actually exhausted now of being asked for money. Which I completely get. Although in a moment of crisis like we have now, people are already putting their hands in their pocket. Whether that's the right move or not is to be thought about. But the point is, people will do it, and I'm sure over the coming weeks, once we have a real plan in action about what we need to do, the fans will, we will do what we can to make it happen. I think one of the it, the so the, if you put in these super restricted actions, how can you go against company law? Because the like we're saying, one of the issues is that if you get under 75%, then if you get a block of people who own 25% of those shares coming together, they can block special resolutions.
But
That's the thing in company law. So
if we flush,
that's the worry.
yeah, but okay, you see, we're into theoreticals here. So let's be realistic. If we flushed out as many restricted actions, you can't cater for absolutely every scenario. You just can't. It's life. But who would those 25 be? So let's have a look at the moment. So you've got seeders. Well, they all vote as a block, of course, because it's through the trustees. So that's about 2.3. I might get the percentages wrong here, so bear with me. You've got Nick Robertson. Well, he's got no interest in blocking a restricted action. There's 11. You've got the original equity take up through the purchase of King's Meadow, and that comes to about another two and a bit, whatever. I'm trying to remember the numbers off the top of my head. But they're all fans. They're the most committed that you could possibly imagine. So,
And that's all
and then
right.
you've got Ananth, who also has got zero interest in the only reason he's invested is because it's fan owned. He likes it. And he thinks it's all good. So, where this mythical, aggressive private equity 25% style people are going to come along and block everything is going to how they where are they going to come from, and how are they going to get in the first place? And then the other bit.
Guess it's not that, is it? It's not the it's not it's not the thing has always been. I mean, yes, Graham, I admit there is a sense of paranoia amongst our group, and I think it's born out of what's happened. I think the sense is that originally, you could sell 15, because I think you're saying that nobody could own more than 15%, which sounds good to me. So you could have, it could have a couple of people that between them own 30%, and they're all, they're great, we've approved them and stuff. But it's where they sell their shares to next is the thing. So it's that longer term protection, I guess, unless there's a clause which is
Well,
that
okay,
first refusal.
so let's try this another way from a company point of view. So these mythical corporate raiders, they've bought 15%. Now, by the way, we'd have all had to have voted to let them in the first place.
Which we could do.
In a moment of sheer weakness or desperation,
Well,
perhaps.
no,
But
we
if
could get
they,
them in.
okay.
It's where they sell their shares to next is the big
Well,
issue.
that's fine. Okay, so they sell their shares to somebody else who then acquires more shares or acting in concert. Well, we just simply vote them off the board. You can own all the shares you want. There's not a lot you can do. People only want that kind of level of ownership for involvement and be able to influence things. So we've still got the ultimate, can you please dispose of those? Now, yeah, you've just inherited 3% of shares and you've already got 15%. Well, can you look to sell those or do something about it? And we'd agree a time frame. Otherwise, well, there's no seat on the board for you.
And
That's pretty
we could
easy.
do that.
Yes, of course we can.
I mean, but they could still block a special resolution. So if we put a resolution in, because I
It's
think
not
that
a
is the.
special resolution to vote somebody off a board. It's just majority vote.
And then they wouldn't have a right, then they wouldn't be allowed to vote.
Well, no, they just wouldn't have any input in the day-to-day running of the club. So they could block if we came up with a special resolution, but
I think that's the
that's not in
only
their
worry.
but that's not in their interest. This is such a hypothetical situation, whereas there's a chart that Michelle did for the finance committee. There's a finance committee report that came to the DT as well, and it's basically got the free cash flow in it. So on our budget, if all things are equal, if we don't have football fortune, if we don't sell a player, if we don't have a dramatic cup run because we haven't budgeted for that, the free cash does that. And you hit a point where we don't have spare cash, so therefore we've got to raise money. So how are we going to do it? I'm open to suggestions. I've spent years trying to find, be it We Are Wimbledon Fund, be it raising money for the budget, Plough Lane bonds, debentures. My grubby fingerprints are all over it. And I'm always welcome and open to suggestions, but we've got to be realistic. We might not need it. And hopefully we don't, but we'd better plan for it just in case we do. Because, like I said, we can see. So back to your point, Adam, 2027's there. But if you think about the lead-in time to get somebody in, we will be able to identify cash flow-wise that we're going to need it, that we may need an investor. I'm not saying that we're going to, that's the wrong words, that we may need an investor because things aren't going how we want them to, pretty much by about May or June of 2026. But to do all of the things that we need to do, let's do them now. So let's get all of the restricted actions that we want in place. Let's make the ground absolutely watertight. You know, let's ensure that, I mean, to me, fan ownership is really straightforward. I don't care what the share class is. I don't care about anything else. We must own 50.01, not the voting rights, because we are below, you know, we're below 75%, don't you, anyway?
Yeah, what number are we at now?
I think it's about 68, but we still own over 75% of the voting rights. Now, for the PLC, it's the voting rights that count. But to be fan owned,
It's 50 plus, yeah.
but it doesn't matter because even if we owned all of the lower share class in voting rights, we would still have the majority. And that wouldn't happen because, of course, we'd always retain a mix. So in reality, 50.01 doesn't mean that. It probably means, and I haven't looked at the numbers, but it would probably mean somewhere between 57 to 59% would be the bottom line because of the mix of shares that we hold. It's just about flexibility. And people say, oh, well, you don't want to leave another board in an awkward position. Even, and this is back to your point, Adam, even if the vote didn't go through for whatever reason this time, it would make it easy for a future board, which you might be on, I might not be, or neither of us might be on at some point in the future, to come back and say, right, we had this discussion last time. Every single safeguard control that we could possibly think of has been put in place. We'll have a vote. So, yeah,
Yeah.
I still see a purpose in doing and going through this process that we're going through now, even at the end of it. We don't move this time because it would just make it easier for a future board rather than making it really hard for a future board.
I think it's right. I think it's right that we're going through this process now. It makes complete sense. And I think we have to understand more about this 75%, what the pros and cons of it are, because I mean I'm aware that there are certain members of this team who are really concerned about us dropping under 75% because of the potential threat in being blocked, and because I think we've been hurt. We're just worried that it
Yeah,
could that something could happen again. I
I
think it's
get
the
it. It's a
only I
for
think it's the only thing.
yeah, I get it. It's a form of PTSD, isn't it, really?
Yeah, that is exact. That's what we're suffering from, and it is that we don't want to be in a situation again where something horrendous happens to the club and our fans. So that's
But I come back to 2019.
yeah.
So, because we didn't have sufficient financial resilience. You can have all the protections you want. If you haven't got financial resilience as well, they're not even a fig leaf. Because eventually you run out of money. So let's be realistic and let's just consider what we would do if we do run out of money and how we approach it and just approach it calmly. It's just scenario modeling is all it is.
I was going to say the thing that I'd be quite interested because I feel that this is also distracting everyone from that active fundraising, active whatever you called it, fundraising activism.
Financial activism,
You
I
know,
call it. Somebody
it,
will come up with a more, marketable phrase than that. But anyway, we'll stick with that one for
so
the
and I
time
feel
being.
like we're getting a bit dis that's distracting us from kind of thinking about different investments and whatever. And I kind of also wonder, I mean, I think we're pretty transparent as much as we can be about our finances wherever possible, and I'd love to see more transparency, obviously. But we clearly know where we're going in terms of 2027. So again, I what would be quite cool, because what caught us out before was like suddenly we're like, oh, we haven't got any money. Whereas I wouldn't mind like something on the website or wherever that kind of has a little graph that shows actually we're just kind of going, we're getting there, we're not in trouble, so people can invest early.
That's exactly what Michelle's, well, it's not Michelle's, but it was in Michelle's paper. It actually came from the finance. It would have come from Laurie. I'll give him Michelle credit for a graph that no doubt Laurie came up with. But it's just saying, this is what we've budgeted for. This is what's going to happen over the period towards 2027. At this point here, assuming that nothing changes, and there is an element of football fortune within the budget, a conservative amount, but there is an amount. It's not zero. At that point, there's no free cash.
Yeah.
So, how do you raise free cash?
Yeah. And again, I mean, I think, listen, guys, we've spoke a lot now, and it is great. And there's still a lot to talk about. I mean, I haven't even mentioned about what I potentially get. I'm guessing a seat on the board, a box or something. But that, those are minor points. And I think we need to come, I think we need to, we might come back to this again at some point, but it's very clear that we need the finances in place. We need to do something now. But I also think we, between ourselves, we, as the older woke members of the fan group, need to get our understanding around the 75 thing, because that, I think, is that is something we've been concerned about.
I think I'll leave you with two things.
Yeah.
75 is a very strange hill to die on.
Yeah,
I'm a great
you,
believer. I'm
yeah.
a great believer in Sun Tzu. And the other bit is, for those who strongly oppose, and I understand the strength of feelings, and I said PTSD, but there is an element of that genuinely. I know what you're opposing. Sort of. But what do you propose? And I mean concrete proposals,
I
not
get it.
concerns of things that might happen. How c constructive criticism, in other words, how do we move forward and protect our equity, which is basically where the conversation you and I were having, Adam, previously, because that's what I'm trying to do.
I know that Niall is not here would say that fair game is the answer, the football regulator is the answer. So if we change,
Well,
if the football pyramid, if the pyramid payments change, the parachute payments change, then in theory there could be more money that comes down to our level.
I'm shaking my head because past experience shows us that all the extra money goes to the playing budget. So we'd either have to increase our playing budget. So our debt doesn't magically vanish because of fair game being the solution to all ills. Yeah, strong lobbying from the Premier League. You don't bank on unknowns. That's a bit like football fortune, isn't it? I just see that as another part of football fortune. We can't budget for that now, and we can't afford to wait for it.
Yeah, I get you. Graham, thank you so much for your time. It's been a
Oh,
pleasure
thank
talking
you.
to you. We will get you back in. And I think we all wish the club the very best over the coming days, because it has been a disaster what's happened over the last 24 hours. But this is a great club with a great fan base, and we will come together. And I'm sure, and I'm hoping this evening, again with the online conversations, I think that if people come together, we can come up with some amazing solutions. We've got it within us.
I agree. Totally agree.
We are and will always be the same old Bombles. We're back. Thank you, Graham.
Thank you.